I'm just going to get a glass of water. We had an end of year Christmas party last night, so I behaved pretty well. But I still feel like I need a bit of water just to keep me going. Hello and welcome to episode 54 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a company who is looking to solve crucial IT challenges by delivering the right technology deployed on the right premises and managed through the right service model. They deliver a broad portfolio of areas critical to IT environments surrounding resiliency, cloud, communications, infrastructure, and much, much more. That company is Intervision, and I'm talking to Dustin Milberg, Field CTO at Intervision. Welcome to the show, Dustin.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Good stuff. So before we get into, you know, my bread and butter, which is great service provider companies, just want to remind everyone out there that if you love great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, click on the link in the show notes. Head to gtwgt.com, register your interest. And as a reminder, go and subscribe on YouTube, hit the click and subscribe button. Got to get that out of the way. That is the way of the world. And also in terms of podcasts, go to your favorite podcast, whether it be Apple, Google, Spotify, whatever it is. This episode and all previous episodes and future episodes will be there, all hosted and distributed by anchor.fm. Okay, Dustin, let's talk about Intervision, a company. Again, I love going back in time, and this is, you know, one of those companies where going back in time creates a great narrative and a great story about how you got to where you guys are today, a very successful, you know, hosting company, and more than that, actually service provider, managed service provider in the world. But before we go into the Intervision history, which started with CAD software, which is great, and I want to kind of dive into that a little bit and the services around that, just give a bit of background about yourself and how you came to be field CTO at Intervision.
Yeah, so I've been in the industry for about 30 years. I actually got my start in EDA doing CAD tools for electronic design automation, so printed circuit boards and integrated circuits. And I've kind of, throughout my career, I've had the good fortune of sitting both on both sides of the table relative to this conversation about service consumer or service provider. And spent the majority of the first part of my years in this industry doing, you know, technical education and building out, technical products inside of a company. Moved over onto the service provider end of things for a little bit in the late 20th century, early 2000s, and then went back onto the customer side of it for a while and joined Intervision about 2.5 years ago as the organization was really, you know, we made some really good acquisitions over the years. I know we're going to talk about our history in a little bit, but one of the key most recent ones was helping us grow out, helping organizations consume and optimize their journey to the cloud. And so having done that for some time on the other side of the table and for a brief stint for another provider, it just was a great opportunity to help the organization round out the portfolio and help customers solve some really, really interesting problems every single day, as opposed to going to work every day and dealing with the same problems all the time. So
that's why a lot of we're kind of cut from a different breed, the guys that worked in service provider land, managed services, because you're correct, we're not focused on one particular aspect. It's not monotonous, and that's kind of why I think people like you and myself and others in the service provider land are sort of, you know, drawn to this industry, because it is about helping people, helping organizations solve problems. That's really cool. So let's look at Intervision as a story. So founded in 1993, opened its doors providing CAD solutions and consulting, and then kind of moved into the data center space. So in actual fact, almost close to one of the oldest companies I've had on the show lately. It's funny, a lot of the latest ones have been kind of startup-y, so it's good to go back to the 90s and talk about that sort of time. And I have a look and see in the timeline, and you know, through 93, 97, from what I understand, it was mainly, you know, services based, you know, that you guys were doing. I know you weren't there, but can you give a bit of background as to, you know, where Intervision started into, you know, that first sort of boom of internet in 2000 and whatnot?
Yeah, I think, you know, you don't need advanced calculus or a slide rule to have figured out in the 90s that technology was kind of the the newest and most accelerated industry for people to be in. And it fundamentally changed the way we behave on every single level, whether that be through how we communicate, how we buy, how we interact, how we search, and when the World Wide Web really took hold in the mid 90s, fundamentally it just really shifted everything. And so organizations realized that they need a fairly large swath of technology, not only to deliver the products that they were selling, but also to develop the products that they were creating. And I think that created a huge opportunity for organizations like Intervision to help them build out their data center strategy. And so the organization did really, really well as these tech giants that we've come to know them by brand name logo, right? Your NetApps, your Ciscos, your Junipers, your EMCs of the world, we're providing these kind of rock solid technology solutions, but very complex for organizations to implement themselves, right? So where Intervision really kind of moved the dial, it wasn't just, I'm going to sell it to you, but it's also, I'm going to sell it to you and I'm going to help you make sure that you're very successful at implementing it and getting full value out of it.
Yeah. And I think the brands that you rattled off are kind of if you look at it, the building blocks of a lot of the IT, services companies in that late 90s, early 2000s, right? They were the ones that dominated, along with the Dells, the Worlds and whatnot. So any stack that you had and any enterprise that was going big into IT as well, really leveraged those big names because that's kind of, they all kind of did their own little niche job, but, in the same fact that, the amount of IT that we needed to consume was only, relevant to those particular brand names. So you guys, I think from the mid sort of 2000, you're really into sort of telephony and collaboration through Cisco. That seems like what, the brand was built on before moving into, the hosting and the cloud and whatnot in the sort of early 2010s and beyond. So it's kind of it's a similar story. And I've talked about this story and the journey for providers quite a bit of times with a few different providers I've had on, but it all seems to lead to where we are today, which is going beyond and, helping customers, partners actually deliver and consume IT differently beyond what was traditionally those building blocks. Now those building blocks are actually more the public cloud, backup, DR. There's so much more to IT than what it was before, but I think one critical point that I want to touch on was in 2018, you acquired BlueLock. Now, BlueLock was a pretty well-known leading provider of disaster recovery. In fact, I knew BlueLock quite well. I knew some people there. We kind of were working in parallel with regards to services from where I was working. So maybe just talk a little bit about the BlueLock acquisition and how that did change, Intervision's trajectory a little bit.
Yeah, so what's interesting is along with the advent of the internet and everybody's race to have a presence there and deliver and optimize there also came a pretty significant threat vector increase, right? Bad actors, whether it be recreational or for money or somewhere in between, you really took advantage of this connected tissue of the internet to get in and do things to people's data. Yeah. And now it's become ransomware, right? But it just was no longer was it optional for organizations to think about a strong DR strategy, whether that would be through natural disaster or self-inflicted or otherwise. It's kind of like COVID, right? It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when we get it. It's what we do to protect ourselves from it as reasonably as we possibly can in order to have the least impactful outcome. And I think the same is true with ransomware today. So, that was fairly strategic for us. I think the people that consume it looked at it as table stakes, right? You have to have it. If you're going to play in the game, you better have that chip. And matter of fact, insurance companies now require it. So I think it's just, it was very fortuitous of Intervision to realize that as we provide hosting services to our customers and delivering a backup and DR as a service makes a lot of sense because you don't want to direct your technical resources away from your core competency, right? So if you're in, regardless of the industry you're in, let's say you're Nike, for example, which is right down the street from where I live, you know, their core competency is developing athletic gear and technology around, athletics, right? So it shouldn't be your core competency to think about DR and backup as a backup and recovery, right? These are not, they're not strategic things. So not only that, you don't want somebody sitting there managing something that you hope you never have to use. Right. Yeah. So it really makes sense to look at these things as more of a consumable service, as opposed to having to build that out yourself. And then backing it up with SLAs and meeting our customers, RTOs and RPOs, fundamental in our development and delivery of those solutions.
Yeah. You made some key points there as well, I think, which obviously resonate and kind of take us to today in terms of where the industry is at. But, you know, I think the one thing I wanted to touch on, and one thing that I thought, is that you mentioned like natural disasters, earthquakes, cyclones, hurricanes, whatever they might be, floods. That was kind of the, I think, the original driving force for DR and backups and whatnot. Like what if something goes wrong? What if a nuke drops, you know, like, God forbid, right? And in today's world, we don't want to typically go down that path, do we? However, I think what's happened is that made people like, is a natural disaster really going to happen? Like, so then they do treat it like insurance, but then a lot of people, you know, don't tend to get insurance unless they actually need it, right? So we get insurance for our houses, for certain items that we've held dear to us, but never really did we think about data being that dear to us or that important. And then again, in that time frame of just thinking about disasters being natural or maybe self-inflicted, people didn't really do DR or offsite backup or whatever it might be, or put in a disaster recovery plan until they got hit, typically. And then they went, oh, okay, maybe we should do it for next time because we've had a bit of a warning shot. But what's happened like recently is that obviously ransomware and cyber attacks have become prevalent, and actually they're front of center in front of mind now, as opposed to what was, which was those natural disasters. So I just kind think like that's definitely changed the landscape of that world. And, you know, I think that's made people more aware that they do need it as a proactive, as opposed to reactive.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, in many ways, a natural disaster is easier for organizations to recover from, as opposed to a ransomware attack.
More predictable.
You can read all sorts of articles on it, right? And you know, the number of people that end up paying the ransom and then still only get a percentage of their data back, you know, and it's interesting too, because I had this conversation with a number of our customers in the past, and people are, you know, they're in industries that are fairly discrete and specific. They're not, getting their data is not something that would be particularly useful to anybody. And they said, well, gosh, you know, we're not a target for ransomware. And I said, well, why is that? And they said, nobody would want our data. We make bread. Who would want our bread making? Who cares? I said, yeah, but ransomware attackers don't care. They don't want your data. They want your money. And the longer you're without your data, the less able you are to be able to do your business. If you're not able to do your business, you're not making money. And in fact, you're losing money. So hackers know that. And so they take advantage of it, and they're non-discriminatory now.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not very specific as to who they go over. They just look for the easiest point of entry, and they look for the easiest to compromise. And they look for those organizations that have big wallets, right? So yeah, maybe you are in the bread making industry, your hostess or whoever, right? But you got a lot of money, and then and your hackers want that.
That's it. Yeah. Once your brand gets threatened, the livelihood of the company gets threatened, then people are willing to do a lot of things on both sides of the coin, right? So yeah, it's really interesting. Hey, just going back to, you know, we could talk about ransomware and cybersecurity for the whole episode almost, right? But I want to just kind of talk back about Intervision and, you know, the history through that 2010s, and more so leading into, you know, today and the services that people are consuming. But, you know, in terms of, you know, what you guys are offering from an infrastructure point of view, private cloud, infrastructure as a service, yeah, how was that structured? And you know, are you still basically running forward with points of presence, data center locations for those more traditional, you know, maybe is it vCloud Director? Is it just vSphere? Like, is that still a service that you guys are running? And, you know, is that something that has continued from that original play 10 years ago?
Yeah, we do still provide quite a bit of infrastructure as a service and platform as a service around the infrastructure play. Yeah. We are seeing a definite trend, however, in moving into the consumption-based model. And the real driver behind that is, I think, a couple of things. One, why pay for a bunch of infrastructure if you know it's going to sit idle a lot of the time, right? And public cloud as opposed to private cloud makes that model far more flexible. Now, it can also be much more expensive if not planned outright. So really in the last 4 years where InterVision has spent a lot of horsepower, focus, and energy is helping organizations look at a strategic adoption of public cloud. And how do you balance out cost, quality, and security while still being able to focus on your core competencies and meet all your internal goals? And that's really, yes, we still provide those services because there are a number of organizations that for whether it's they don't want to move to the cloud for some specific reason, they don't feel that they have the capabilities to do that, or that they're kind of hedging their bets and they're saying, gosh, we want to time this out and look at whenever our infrastructure ages out, maybe that's the time we go do it. But that thoughtful migration to the cloud is where we spend a lot of our time having conversations with our customers today.
Yeah. So you still kind of run those, I guess, kind of, I'm not going to call them legacy. I'm going to call them traditional infrastructure as a service players. Sure. So still get your tin that you guys put your own operating system on, your own, well, not your own, but you'd use maybe like an ESX or a vSphere. Sure. And you're putting your control plans on top of that, some control panels. So you allow your customers to still come in and consume a cloud that's not a public cloud, and then consume all the services outright as well that you offer. So, because if you go to the website, InterVision, you guys are running a lot of services, lots of, not only from an infrastructure point of view, platform, public cloud, but also networking, storage, or all that kind of stuff. So I think it's important for a modern service provider to maintain their own presence still, like in this world where it's hybrid and multiple clouds. I think it's still very important because people will go to the cloud, and you guys are obviously assisting customers on that journey. And part of assisting a customer on that journey is ascertaining if it is like right to go to the cloud holistically, right? Maybe it is better to run some workloads on InterVision still. Maybe it's better to run your storage here and then run some of your modern platforms on the public cloud. So, I mean, in terms of, infrastructure as a service, and I'm interested in, your storages as well. So what are you guys running today in terms of that sort of stack for your own infrastructure?
Yeah, well, I mean, it does vary because some organizations that we've delivered these managed services for have a specific requirement.
Relative to private clouds as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them do. As a matter of fact, we're starting to even see that in public cloud, and we can talk a little bit more about that later. But, we partner, our strongest partners, some of the partners with whom we do the most business, still a lot of Cisco. We see a lot of Juniper in our stack. NetApp is very much alive and well, and matter of fact, getting really strategic. And you mentioned the word hybrid, so I'm going to piggyback on that.
Yeah,
you're 100% right. Public cloud does not mean it's an all or nothing decision. And there are a lot of workloads that are still much better served by remaining in either a private cloud or self-managed. And so, organizations like NetApp, for example, have made significant strides in helping organizations bridge that gap and consume the storage and leverage it strategically, regardless of where the workloads live. So that's why we really have maintained strong partnerships with those forward-thinking technology providers that are, realizing that hybrid is really where most organizations will end up.
Yeah, you're right. And then making it easy to, I guess the one thing that we've definitely seen as a trend is that the application leads the way from a net new perspective. So if a company comes and it's a net new company, they're going to build and have and consume applications that are more modern. So more SaaS based, maybe even containerization, Kubernetes, whatever it might be. But the majority of companies, which I would assume that you guys are still dealing with, still have these traditional workloads on virtual machines. They need to be kind of moved somewhere. They need the storage. The storage requirements are growing, So that's where you can kind of get smart about it with that storage. And I mean, are you guys running any object storage platform there as well for your customers or internally?
So we do have some customers that require object storage, and this is where things like, you know, even some of the older storage platforms that you may not think about, but there are definitely obfuscation layers that you can put in to turn a block into object. But yeah, I mean, you think about anybody that's got content that isn't going to have a high rate of change is ideal for block storage, or excuse me, for object storage. And, you know, in really where we try to do is meet the customers where we are. We don't want to be so prescriptive that we don't give them the flex and choose the technology solution that's all ultimately going to meet their needs and be best for them. And I think the same is true for our entire tech stack. So yes, like I said, low rate of change content is ripe for the object-based storage.
Okay. And do you guys run any specific object storage, or are you tapping into the public cloud? I mean, NetApp, I know, has its own version.
Yeah, I mean, we do, as I mentioned, partner very heavily with NetApp and leverage their storage platforms, both the, you know, object and block, as well as the ability to provision those on-premise or in the cloud, either one. So they're probably our primary partner relative to storage, just because of the flexible model. And quite honestly, their rate of innovation is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm actually, you know, NetApp have done a brilliant job of reinventing themselves over the past, like, I guess 5 years, I suppose, from going from a company that was like, you know, we do NAS and those FASs, and to really sort of starting to do more in the software and offering that collaborative, you know, bridge between the on-prem to the cloud. So yeah, I'm always impressed with what they're doing, because a lot of people write them off a few years ago, right? So they've done really well.
Yeah, it's interesting, because at the same time, the Pures of the world were really, you know, optimizing. Everything was about IOPS at that point in time, and how
flash IOPS. Yep.
And you know, obviously Dell EMC kind of cornered the market back in the, you know, early part of the 2000s and the .com bubble. You know, you'd see an EMC rack in just about every major data center there was. And I think that where organizations like NetApp have really recognized is that we have to make it easy for people to consume, and they need to be able to do it seamlessly, regardless of where the workloads are. And so they've made huge investment in their software, as well as how people leverage the software to be able to take full advantage of it. Most more modern organizations and more modern platforms are doing taking an everything as code approach, including the infrastructure, right? So things like Terraform, and NetApp has jumped on that and made it very easy for organizations to leverage those types of technologies and maintain their course and speed relative to consumption.
Yeah, love me a bit of Terraform. It's always good to do a bit of infrastructure as code. And actually, just to finish the NetApp cycle, sure. I was talking to a NetApp local SE yesterday, as it just so happens, and he was saying that 95% of his sales that he does in this region, which is where we've got very big oil and gas companies and sort of some really big enterprises, 95% isn't related to a virtualization or a VM or a workload like that. It's literally it's pure storage. Well, not pure storage, but you know what I mean? It is pure storage, just to flip some words around. So that was quite interesting. So I thought, you know, they're doing so well in that particular niche, which is still, let's get some mass storage and let's make it easy to consume. And then, you know, customers can, you know, do what they want with it. So very interesting. Question about, Intervision and the value, you know, obviously it's been a bit of a transition. Every service provider has had to pivot a little bit in terms of what they offer and add more value to their customers. So how's Intervision handling that?
Yeah, well, ultimately everything is about outcomes for us, right? It's gone are the days where we come in and I just say, hey, can I sell you some storage? Can I sell you some switching gear? Can I sell you some WAPs? Those things are commodities, and realistically, the value proposition of organizations just pushing the gear is kind of, and everybody understands how the reseller model works. That's not strategic. Strategic is really about understanding what the business drivers are for our customers, and then how we position our services to be able to help them reach those goals. And so it takes a lot of business acumen and focus in order to do that. It also takes a lot of understanding of how the evolution of the technology landscape has changed and then how we bring those two together. And so, you know, like I mentioned earlier, public cloud is a key player in that, that role, as well as helping organizations modernize their platforms. You talked about data earlier, you know, and it's, you're right, back in the 90s, we were just developing technology. And then, you know, kind of coming into the 2000s, we started thinking about, well, what are we going to do with all this data? We hear terms like big data, structured data, unstructured data. And now data is really the key thing that everybody's after, yeah. Right? As a matter of fact, if we could get the data we needed without having to write applications, I think we would. Mm-hmm. But the applications and the platforms are the means to get the data we need. And that's really the intelligence that helps us shift the way we develop products and services, or that our customers develop products and services, that the way that they innovate. And so we made a big bet relative back in February of this year, and we made an acquisition of an organization formerly known as Virtuosity Consulting Group. Yep. And they bring a huge strength of platform engineering, innovation services, application modernization, as well as a whole set of offerings around AI, ML, and analytics.
Very cool.
To feed back into the organizations, and leveraging kind of your more modern technologies and Web 3.0 things like, how do I leverage blockchain? What about NFTs? What do I do to get into the metaverse, right? And so these are the things that are necessary for organizations to at least start thinking about, if not already harnessing, because the consumers have changed, right? We were raised entering our information on a keyboard, right? We sit and type. Now, you know, I've got a 14-year-old son and he does everything on one of these, and or he does them in virtual glasses or virtual goggles. And so, you know, understanding how users interact and consume is really what's critical. And I think that's been our big bet, is helping organizations first think about their platforms in that way, and then how do they leverage the power of the data that they either already have or could have by making the adjustments they need to meet the market demand.
Yeah, data is definitely the key point here, right? And, you know, from the point of view of at Vayne, we talk about the reactivation of data. So, you know, the fact that from a backup perspective, you know, you've got all this data that's going in, and traditionally it was kind of like a sunk cost and no one cared about it. They might have accessed it once or twice if they had a disaster. But, you know, what you're kind of, you know, ascertaining there is that holistically data is important no matter where it is, no matter where it's created. But more importantly, you have to be able to make it work for you again, because if we're storing it, what value do we drive out of it? So what can we gain out of, you know, running some sort of analytics over that data from any sort of software, right? You talk about the bread making facility, you know, I'm sure they generate a ton of, you know, telemetric data across their production line. You know, could they analyze that to make their process even 1 or 2% more efficient? That obviously adds to bottom line. So there's lots of that goes around. You actually talked about a lot of great things. I'm trying to remember if I can get in and steer the conversation. I think I want to touch on the Web3 stuff, because I think that's obviously quite pertinent and quite interesting. It's and controversial as well, obviously, in today's world. But just spending a little bit of time on the AWS and the Azure cloud migration. So how many customers are you seeing, you know, doing the lift and shift versus the consultant? Okay, let's try and modernize an application for that platform, as opposed to just taking a VM and making it a VM that was, you know, on ESX and actually just converting that to an EC2 or to an Azure instance?
Yeah, you know, it really is a mixed bag. So we have been very careful to not draw those assumptions up front. The cloud providers, both AWS, Azure, and GCP does the same thing. You know, they have programs to help you manage the cost of the migration. And so, but it's interesting. I did a podcast, about 2 years ago, and I wrote an article on LinkedIn. And so you can search me and find it up there. But the title of the article was "The Journey to the Cloud is More Important Than the Arrival." And what I meant by that is, if you are really thoughtful and strategic in the way you plan your cloud migration, then you may not end up exactly where you thought. You may end up in the same place you thought you'd end up, but the way you got there might be very different. Or you may even realize that the value you can get out of it is very different. And so, you know, in that migration approach, you know, Amazon has what's called their 6 R's. It's really about, do I rehost? So lift and shift, like you talked about. Do I think about replatforming, right? Do I go from virtual machines into, maybe a native cloud service or a serverless environment? Do I repurchase? Do I, maybe keep it on premise or look at part of the workload on premise? Do I think about refactoring and re-architecting, or do I retire it? Is it even an asset I even need anymore? Is it helping my business grow? And so, it really is all over the map. I would say that, legacy, we use the term legacy, but legacy kind of more monolithic platforms, yep, or applications don't lend themselves particularly absolutely well to being, yeah, refactored, yeah, right? But
people try and shove them in there, right? People try and shove them
they
in.
They do.
Say, because we've got the CIO has said, or the CTO or the CEO has said, we've got to go AWS because everyone's going that way. Let's just shove it in. And then there's bad outcomes after that, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends. So, as a matter of fact, in some ways, you mentioned SaaS earlier. I think that organizations that are really strategic, again, going back to core competencies, I think about, I needed knee surgery about 15 years ago. I didn't go learn to become a knee surgeon to do surgery on myself. Somebody else can do that for me, yeah, right? So I think about that relative to technology. There's not a lot of value in hosting your own platforms if somebody else can do it better for you. Now there is, if it's part of your core competency and what you take to market. And so, I think that you're seeing that SaaS world grow very much as a result of that. Managing your own SAP environment is cumbersome and tough and, yeah, expensive. Same with Salesforce or anything else that you could consume as a SaaS-based service. Now there may be a very specific business reason to want to do that. And then we have to look at what's the right model to do that. When we look at organizations on the other end of the spectrum that are developing their own products and that they take to market, that's kind of more of that, hey, what makes sense to refactor before we migrate? And then what makes sense to get moved now and then kind of take advantage of as we're doing our development life cycle, every new feature and function goes into the new architecture and we slowly phase out, as opposed to we have some that are just like, look, can you rebuild this thing for us and then move it? And yeah, so it's really all over the map. It's a pretty wide swath.
Interesting. Hey, I want to touch on two things before we kind of finish off. I want to touch on that Web 3.0 thing. I think that's really interesting. What's your take on the uptake there from the actual technology point of view versus the mess that we're seeing in today's market, right? Which is the bad side of it. There's a good side of the technology. I do believe that we're in a bit of a reckoning with crypto, blockchain, Web 3.0. But what's happening is that we're shaking out the pretenders, the thieves, the bad actors, and we're going to come out with, the cream and effectively the innovative solutions. But where do you see that, moving forward?
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that uninteresting news never makes it into the news feed, right? So blockchain has been around, the foundation of blockchain has been around for over 25 years. And so fundamentally, the use of it to maintain security and chain of custody of things is not a new concept, but the way it's being used is new. And so I think that with Web 3.0 technologies, this goes back to the human side of things, right? Yeah. Is what I'm doing for the right reasons, and am I doing the right things? I think we're, the advent of things like public cloud and hosted services make it very easy for people to go from an idea to an implementation rather quickly. Yeah. Whether or not that's a good idea or it's thought out well or its use is altruistic, that's up to the people that consume it. I think that it's hard. We're in this really dubious position of we don't get to be the ethics police on what people do. However, right, we do get to advise and make sure everybody's available, has availability to the risk profile. You bring up a really interesting question because we start to get into the morality of technology as opposed to just what's possible and the art of the possible.
No, that's awesome.
finally, we don't want Skynet to become aware, right?
No, no. Yeah. And we don't need Skynet creating a million DeFi Ponzi schemes either, do we? So there's that as well. Hey, final question around DR. And one thing that I wanted to touch a bit more time on, but we'll just do it quickly in a couple of minutes, is where do you see the state of DR and replication as a service today? Because obviously I kind of go that backup as a service has been done. People understand that. I still think there hasn't been quite an inflection point with regards to DR because people still don't understand they need it. But certainly technologies like, you know, low RPO, CDP, continuous data protection, you know, from an on-prem to a cloud, that's going to drive a little bit more. But where do you see the state of DR as a service today?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the reasons why people need to have a DR strategy, right? And so your point is a really good one. You got a data center, you're in the middle of a place like Florida, just got nailed with two bad storms in a row, right? So that begs the question, should I rebuild in Florida or should I move my workload somewhere else? Now that you've got the advent of public cloud, let's make your workloads highly portable and easy to just choose a zone that you like, right? And so you can pick the most innocuous, least likely to be hit with some sort of natural disaster. And then next thing you know, it gets hit with a technology disaster, a power spike, whatever, right? So there's no way to 100% guarantee you won't be hit with some sort of disaster, whether it's self-inflicted, caused nefariously, or completely out of your control. So I think that today's landscape teaches us the bigger risk profile is really about bad actors, whether those be inside your company or outside your company, and protecting yourself from what that possible blast radius could be. So the other really big bet we've made at InterVision is taking what was our traditional DR and backup as a service and parlaying that into ransomware protection as a service. So not only giving you the RTOs and the RPOs to protect your data and restore it should you get hit, but also putting those guardrails in place to give you the lowest risk profile possible to eliminate the need or the potential of a risk, everything from protecting your organization against social engineering to what happens to technical boundaries and how do you protect against that. So I think that is more where organizations are going to want to go is think about where could the risk potentially come from? Where's the greatest opportunity to get hit? It's really not about the natural disaster. It's more about what people do, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And we backboned our entire ransomware protection as a service, as well as our DR and backup traditional offerings with the cloud, which means you're doubly protected, right? You've got a public cloud to go to. As a matter of fact, and it's the strategy a lot of our customers have even taken to put their toe in the water for public cloud. I think that's really where I'm seeing organizations make that shift.
So what you're saying resonates with the messaging that from me working at a backup company, like we're the backup and recovery is part of the solution. The replication is part of it. It's a tool set. And what a company like InterVision is doing is building the bumpers on both ends, right? How do you educate? How do you recover? What's the processes after you get hit? That's the important part of it. So I guess what you're saying is, you know, for me is that this is only going to get more, you know, I say lucrative for you guys, more important for your customers and partners because they can leverage your solutions that are holistically looking to beat it end to end. So that's a really good way to sort of end up. Hey, this has been great. I really love what InterVision are doing. Strong portfolio, touching a myriad of different services, obviously doing very good things in the space. So look, it's been great to have you on. I'll just round up and finish by saying that if you aren't subscribed or new to the show, please go to GTWGT. You can hit me up on Anthony Spiteri on Twitter, if Twitter still is a viable thing in the next couple of weeks, or GTWGT podcast as well. So with that, thanks to Dustin, thanks to InterVision, and we'll catch you next time on Great Things with Great Tech.
Thanks so much.
Awesome. All right, you got 1 minute left exactly. That was very well timed. I'll kick that stopwatch.